Good morning, everyone. Happy Thursday morning and welcome to SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. You are with your regular co-host Nick Angus and the lovely Hannah Schauder.
Good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be here. We hope you're having a wonderful drive to work or school. We're actually coming to you from the past because Nick got his wisdom teeth removed on Thursday and would be, well, is unable to speak today. So here we are.
Here we are. I know it is a little bit unfortunate, but you know what? Recording from the past is a bit of a fun opportunity.
Absolutely.
And we're looking forward to what we delve into today. A little bit of a different idea delving into today. What are we doing, Hannah?
We're doing what went wrong. And I've been really like keen to do this thing for quite a while because we look at a lot of themes, a lot of genres, a lot of, you know, different ideas. But looking, and we look at a lot of really good stuff, things we love, things that did really well.
Yeah.
We don't always tend to focus on what went totally wrong.
Unfortunately, out there in the entertainment industry, there are pieces that haven't done well at the box office and in public opinion. So today we're going to delve into that, but also look at some theatre pieces that have a play on words with what went wrong. But for now, you're with SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. We're going to go to our first song break and we'll be back with our film segment. Stay tuned.
And welcome back to SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. You're here with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. on Sin 90.7. So this week we're looking at what went wrong. Now, when we talk about this idea of what went wrong, how did these pieces of entertainment go wrong, we're looking not just at the box office ratings and everything like that, but just, you know, how did these ideas flop? How did the production go down? And, you know, how did the movie not totally convey what it wanted to? So we're going to start with our screen segment. And we thought we'd like go with something a bit more interesting, go with superhero movies.
Our superhero segment is making its appearance today. And look, we love our superhero films, Hannah and I, but we found that there are so many out there that has to be a few that we want to discuss more about what went wrong there. And it is unfortunate because the superhero universe is stunning and without it, who knows what the entertainment industry would do.
Yeah.
However, I think it is necessary to look at the ones that haven't done so well and maybe why they didn't so well in comparison to the other ones that pre-exist with them. So we've got two we're going to be talking about today and they come from both the Marvel and the DC universe. So starting off, we're going to go into the DC universe and we're going to go with the remake of Fantastic Four. Now, this was a 2015 remake from the original 2005 version. And it's really, really interesting to know because both these films, they didn't actually do incredibly well, but the remake was noted for not doing very well at all.
Which is such a shame because I actually loved the original Fantastic Four.
I know, but to know that both didn't do very well, it is a shame, but it's really, really interesting to notice that the most recent one
was actually
worse.
The one that, yeah.
But as always, a quick synopsis to start. Four young outsiders teleport to an alternate and dangerous universe, which alters their physical form in shocking ways. The four must learn to harness their new abilities and work together to save Earth from a former friend turned enemy. Now, as you can see in the synopsis there, these four individuals are battling a former friend turned enemy. And I think this was one of the major problems with the discrepancy between the original and the remake in 2015 is that they had the exact same storyline and the exact same enemy. And I think this is a really, really stark point in noticing what went wrong is that to remake a whole story and to have everything the same, especially within a superhero universe, it's quite boring and it's quite dull. There's nothing too new. They focused on the same villain. And look, there were little bits here that were adapted, you know, and tweaked a little bit, but to have this same storyline, it was really, really unfortunate because the Fantastic Four universe within the Marvel universe is huge. There are an enormous amount of characters out there.
Yeah.
So I think this was a major point in saying maybe this is what went wrong. It's just following the same kind of villain line.
Which is really interesting because you'd think that with a remake, that is the point. It's literally a remake.
Yes.
You know, same idea, but oh, we have better effects and better CGI and, you know, maybe better actors. But that is ultimately the movie's downfall, which is, oh, we've seen this before. You just wasted a whole lot of money on the exact same story. You couldn't even spice it up a little bit.
I know. And it is a shame because I think it is a really, really fantastic storyline. And I think it has a lot of, you know, a lot of comedy, a lot of humour dotted throughout. And I think it has from four compelling characters. So to see this kind of flop was a real shame. For some figures, we're going to be referencing Rotten Tomatoes a lot today, which is an online reviewer site, and this only made 9%. Which is not,
is
we
so
don't,
painful.
Yeah, it is not good, unfortunately. And look, doesn't any film deserve 9%? I don't know. You know, you never know. As I said, Rotten Tomatoes, they look at everything review style. So it was really unfortunate to see that such a lower review. In money terms, this film lost $85,000 to $106,000 after inflation. So another really, really big number. And yeah, again, unfortunate to see like such a big loss. But look, I think it is, you know, it is a learning point. All these films that within the superhero universe that haven't done as well, it's a learning point for other directors, but also the directors behind these films to say, okay, well, on our next adventure, what can we do better and what can we do right? Because I think out there, the superhero universe is one of the hardest things to get right.
Yeah.
You see how many competitors are out there. You see all the followers, all the comic book readers and everyone who loves this film. I'm a fanatic as well as Hannah. And so to get something right like this, it's actually really, really difficult. So I think you've got to really pay respect to the production teams behind any superhero film for really having a crack. But I think from Fantastic Four, the main thing that was learned was that it was just following the same storyline with the same villain that maybe proved to be the biggest downfall.
This is quite interesting because now the second movie choice is actually quite a contrast to this. We're looking also at Suicide Squad, which is definitely worth touching on. I'm glad we actually now have a chance to talk about it, where instead of, well, it's sort of the same, I guess, as recycling storylines, but too many storylines.
Yes.
So I'm going to give a very quick synopsis.
And just before we do, just to confirm, this is the DC Universe, and Fantastic Four was from the Marvel Universe. I think I accidentally said before we were delving into the DC Universe when we were delving into the Marvel.
That's right. Okay. Good that we cleared that up. Seriously, what went wrong with SAS today? Getting all the wrong universes. So Suicide Squad, a fantasy science fiction action film, figuring they're all expendable, a U.S. intelligence officer decides to assemble a team of dangerous incarcerated supervillains for a top secret mission. Now armed with secret weapons, Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Captain Boomerang, Killer Croc, and other despicable inmates must learn to work together. Dubbed Task Force X, the criminals unite to battle a mysterious and powerful entity while the diabolical Joker launches an evil agenda of his own.
So even in that, there's so much going on.
Exactly. Like, you think that that synopsis is complicated. Well, watch the movie. So this movie was really interesting because I saw it in 2016 when it first came out, the day before a sack, actually. We do love that. And when I first saw the movie, I actually thought it was quite good. And I'm like, wow, it's pretty well made. I like the use of all the effects and CGI and you know, the big flashy text. But then going back later and actually analyzing this film, I realized that there were lots of problems with it. Now, I don't have too many big personal issues. This film did only get 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty yuck.
It's not great.
No, it's pretty awful. And so, but I think the really big problem is that culturally, this movie flopped. This was meant to, you know, in a sense, give, you know, shed light on lots of villains that don't really get to be seen in our screens, you know, like Captain Boomerang. I'm sure no one knew who he was. Deadshot, for example. Diablo. There's just lots of really good superheroes, but there were just way too many storylines to play with. Too many characters. The first half an hour of the movie is purely backstory.
And that's a problem that you see in a lot of films these days, not just superhero films, but when you have so many characters, not only do you have a lot going on between the relationships between these characters, but you've got to give background, because if you don't give background to characters, then you don't sympathise with them. You don't find emotional connection.
Yeah.
So if you've got, you know, already five characters you have to give backstory to, that takes up valuable cinema time, which you could be spent doing action, which could be spent doing, you know, humour, comedy. So that's a real, like, even from the get-go, like written down on paper, having lots of characters is a risk.
Yeah, that's right. And we've discussed this as well with other films like Crimes of Grindelwald, which is part of the Fantastic Beasts series, and how that was a massive problem. And lots of other movies as well, like also Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes.
Also lots of characters and lots of backstory. And sometimes it takes the movie's focus away from what's actually important.
Yeah.
So I think from the get-go, the movie's already spent way too much time actually telling us who these characters are. And then it's like, oh, we got to get straight into it. Because we don't have a lot of time in this show to completely delve into all of our thoughts, I would highly recommend if you watch YouTube, go on to the YouTube channel Wisecrack, and they do a really good review of what went wrong in Suicide Squad as well. And I'm actually looking at some of the comments from this video just to, you know, kind of point out what were some of the issues with this movie. There were some really good ones, because even though there's a lot of backstory, there's actually a lack of character development.
And that's the ironic
thing. Really
ironic. Exactly, because I think in the end they had all these characters and they decided, well, we can't do all this backstory, you know, and that's a choice you've got to make. You know, you've only got about 2 hours to play with a film, and if they'd done backstory on every single character, you would be looking at 20 minutes left.
Yeah.
So that was the decision made, but then it's ironic because as a result of this, characters like Will Smith, like Harley Quinn, Will Smith and Margot Robbie, who play Deadshot and Harley Quinn, respectively, they lost really important character development.
Absolutely. And with that, characters that we already know and love, such as Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn is such a fantastic character. I actually think Margot Robbie did a really good job. But the movie really just didn't give her time to have a really good development or even give her a good character in the first place. Because, you know, she's quite sexualized, very cheerleadery, very, you know, all over the Joker, which is what she is normally. But I feel like I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of the manic side of her.
Yeah.
Rather than just, the cuckoo girl.
Yeah.
Because I think she's such a good character and it really would have been worth elaborating more on that. Another big issue was the trailer.
They put way
too much into the trailer. And the issue is that the trailer itself was really good. And it misled everyone.
And the interesting thing about this is that we see Marvel films and DC films these days, they're actually restricting the amount shown in their trailers now. For instance, the new Avengers Endgame film, which I'm so excited for, coming out in April this year, their trailers are only going to include footage from the first 20 minutes.
That's really interesting.
And it's predicted to be a three-hour film.
Wow.
So you can already see there that it's just these movies because, you know, you never want to walk out of a film and go, the trailer was a little bit better. Or the trailer, like, I got more hype for the trailer than I have seen after watching the film. You never want to have that feeling. So I think they've learned from that. Which I was saying before, you know, it's a learning experience. So it's all, you know, all positive.
Absolutely. I will just point out another couple of issues before we go to a music break. Something else that I found really interesting was that the writer, David Ayer, was only given 2 weeks to write the entire script for the movie.
Yeah.
Who on earth can write a script for two and a half hours?
I think a lot of people say, oh, just put it together. But it's really important. Because
it's really important.
It's what evokes sympathy, what evokes comedy.
That's right.
And you've got to get those points.
And so because he had such a small time frame, the movie, you know, has been described as not being very funny, borderline offensive. And it means that there's actually no real message in the movie at all. Because you're trying to figure out what exactly you're meant to learn from this. Because it's a group of villains coming together to be superheroes. Well, you know, is there much to really learn?
I know.
And then my last big issue with it, and Nick and I might have had a bit of a rant before, was who on earth is the villain in this movie? You've got like three separate villains.
Yeah.
One of them, Enchantress, who you focus on, spoiler alert, if you know, for the first five minutes of the movie, but you have Enchantress, and she was never really meant to be the villain.
No.
She's like an accidental villain. You have the Joker, who is designed to be a villain but doesn't actually commit to being a villain. And then you have one other character who I might not mention because it might be a bit of a spoiler, but you have another character who's actually a brilliant villain but
not
maybe should have been revealed early on but maybe wasn't meant to be a villain.
Exactly. There's a lot of confusion around who is the villain in this. And I think, look, maybe that was a strategy by the production team is to say, well, let's make this, you know, really, really complex and say, who can pick our villain? But look, sometimes a straightforward villain is the way to go and a strong villain is what you want. But for now, that wraps our first discussion on the superhero segment. Today we talked about Fantastic Four, the 2015 remake, as well as the 2016 DC film Suicide Squad. We really hope you've enjoyed this. As I said, Hannah and I are fanatics of the superhero universe, hence we are not dissing. We don't like to diss superheroes at all.
No.
But I think it's really cool to actually point out where some have gone wrong and where these production teams have learned from that and then gone on to make much more like memorable and amazing films. But for now, this is SAS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. We'll be back with a bit of a game next after this song.
A bit of excitement. So we'll be right back.
That was Groovin' by Flamingosis and Young Bay. You are with SAS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with your regular hosts, Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. Hope you're having a lovely drive to work, school or wherever your journey leads to. Now it is time for a little bit of a fun segment of the day. It is time for our game, Bombed Out.
Oh!
There was a bit of a delay, but it still worked.
You know what? It still works. So this game, Bombed Out. Pretty much, Nick and I are going to be proposing 2 to 3 films or TV shows to each other, and we have to guess which one performs the worst at the box office.
Now, these might be sequels, prequels, remakes, or just completely random films, but it's going to be a real test to see which one did worse at the box office, and then we'll discuss from there what went wrong in that entertainment piece.
Yeah.
So without further ado, Hannah, let's go for you for our first show of Bombed Out.
Oh! Absolutely love it. Okay, so for my first combo, I don't think you've seen these ones. They're two kids movies.
Okay.
Because, I mean, what does, you know, actually, I find kids movies be quite the paradox because they can do really badly in terms of the critics, but most of the time they're pretty successful because the kids love them.
Who doesn't love an animated film?
Exactly. So these are two animated films. Okay. The first is The Emoji Movie.
Okay.
And the second is Angry Birds, the movie.
Ooh. So these are two films that have really been based off the social media.
Pretty much.
Angry Birds is an app and the emojis are what you use every day in texting.
Exactly.
Okay, for this one, I'm going to say the one that did worse was The Emoji Movie.
You are absolutely correct. The Emoji Movie got 8% on Rotten Tomatoes. However, they boxed office $217.8 million. That's almost, So they did incredibly well considering how badly they performed.
Wow.
For the box office,
I remember both these films being advertised and there was always that underlying urge of being like, will these do well? Will they not? So it's interesting to see that sometimes critic reviews doesn't equal box office success.
No, exactly. And I think even Angry Birds still would have done quite well. I would love to quickly read out one of the reviews that Angry Birds got because it's so funny. For recently hatched members of the nest, it's a bright and colourful distraction. For the rest of us, it's about as entertaining as avian flu.
A little bit of sass in that,
I think. A little bit of sass. That was from Empire magazine. I thought that was just really funny. So really interesting to see those two pairs as well. Nick, do you want to give us your first pair as well?
And what are we playing again?
Bombed Out.
Oh, sorry. We're going to stop doing that now.
I love it.
All right, so I'm going to pose to you my two today, Hannah. My first is a comedy and my second is a TV series.
Okay.
So the first one I'd like to put towards you is our very popular franchise of The Hangover. Now, there have been three films in The Hangover franchise, but today I'm going to be looking at The Hangover 1 and The Hangover 3, which didn't do as good.
Oh. I'm going to say Hangover 3 didn't do as well.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. The Hangover 3 didn't do well. And look, I think the reasoning behind this is it's pretty obvious. Sometimes an original, you can't beat an original.
Exactly.
We looked at this with the remake, with the reboots, and something especially for comedy, where the comedy is so fresh, so new, and the storyline's so unique, to kind of do it another two times, you can kind of already tell that it's probably not going to be as funny. You know, it's a third Hangover, you know what I mean? Can it get any funnier?
Yeah.
So I think that's fitting that that one didn't work
out. Now, for my second, well, this is more like a triple. We're going to talk the 50 Shades of Grey series, and just bear in mind that we're never going to talk about it on the show because I don't think the series deserves any more time than it's going
to
get in
this
segment.
And if anyone wants to help me answer this, please send through to all our socials because I don't know how I'm going to answer this.
Oh, my God. So the trilogy has now been released and, you know, for your viewing disappointment.
The sass is real.
Wow. And we're not meant to be biased on the show. Mm. So, Nick, tell me, which 50 Shades of Grey movie failed? 50 Shades of Grey, 50 Shades Darker, or 50 Shades Freed?
I wish the question was which of those titles is the worst. I'm going to say, look, there's, I don't know, because I've looked at the Hangover. And so I've kind of got the same sentiments, but for some reason I'm going to go 50 Shades Darker.
I might just quickly fact check you because
Hannah, we don't want to make a mistake with our bombs out.
That's right. You're actually incorrect.
Oh, no.
It was actually the first movie, 50 Shades of Grey, the first one got the worst reviews of 25% on Rotten Tomatoes.
See, that's really, really interesting. You don't find that normally. Like, we've just come off The Hangover talking about a unique storyline. Can it get any better? Here, it's gotten better for both of the
second and third films. Really ironic, even though it box office $571 million, which is totally insane.
It's really interesting to notice the juxtaposition between critic reviews and box office success because sometimes there's no relation, whereas sometimes they're really, really tight. So it's been really, really cool to like notice when that occurs and when it doesn't.
Yeah,
absolutely. So for my fourth one of our bombed out segment, I posed to a TV series. We've just looked at films, but this time it's for a TV series and a very popular TV series as it is. We're going to be looking at House of Cards and we're going to be comparing the first season to the sixth season. Now, I know that's quite diverse and it's over many years, but I think it'll be really interesting to look at from start to end, how has it changed? So, Hannah, which one didn't do as good with the critic reviews, the first season or the sixth season?
Also, I watched House of Cards and I absolutely loved the series up until, like, took, you know, about the fourth season. So I've got a good feeling it's going to be the sixth season. That's the worst.
And you're absolutely correct. On Rotten Tomatoes, the first season got 86%, whereas the sixth season got 72%. So look, nothing too big, but it is still noticing that discrepancy.
That's really interesting.
So we hope you have enjoyed our segment. And what have we been playing, Hannah?
We've been playing Bombed Out.
Oh!
Love it. So what did you think of some of our movie choices? Do you think maybe we should have picked some other movies or TV shows, for example? Please let us know on Facebook, facebook.com/sass, where we're going to be posting this episode online. And just let us know what you think. But until then, we're going to go to a quick song break and we're going to come back for our TV segment.
And for our song break, we're going to an absolute bop today. We're going to Tightrope. So enjoy this one. We'll be back here with Sass the Screen Ends.
We are back. This is the Screen Erin Stage Show with Hannah Shadow and Nick Angus on Sin 90.7. So we are talking about what went wrong. We're having a lot of fun so far. We just did a fun little game called Bombed Out.
I don't have the sound effect.
We don't even have the sound effect.
But go back. If you have missed any of the show, please, we'll give you the details at the end of how you can find that for our segment on Bombed Out, but for also all of our interesting discussion we've had today.
Absolutely. So we're now in our air segment, which is our television segment. And look, there were so many TV shows to choose from what went wrong. There was one in particular that I wanted to focus on, a more recent show called Insatiable. Now, this is going to be a very quick segment because we're covering lots in today's show. But I just wanted to look at some of the big ideas that went wrong in this show. Mm-hmm. This show hasn't been getting such good ratings. It's gotten a lot of controversy.
And I think you said before, it's gone wrong in the social and cultural aspects.
That's right. So even though I'm sure the show is doing well in terms of its viewing, what ideas has it actually
failed to convey?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So Insatiable tells the story of Patty, a student who dramatically loses weight having had her mouth wired shut after being punched in the face. And pretty much what happens is that she is overweight and is bullied by everyone, but by having her wired shut, she loses the weight, turns out to be very attractive, and decides to now use her newfound beauty to get revenge.
Mm.
So there's already quite a few iffy moments.
Yes, already in that description, you kind of go, okay, this is, you know, like that song, it's walking a little bit of a tightrope with how it can go correctly.
Absolutely. So even though the show has been described as a satire, it's a bit unclear in terms of what it's actually trying to satirize. So we're actually going to be referencing an article for this segment by Scott Bryan, who's a BuzzFeed TV editor. 13 Ways Insatiable is Really Freaking Problematic. So let's get straight into them. We're not going to cover everything. We will put the link when we post the podcast if you want to look at the full article, but we're just going to touch on some of the points here. Number one, which I think is the biggest one, is being fat is equated with being out of control and sick.
Yeah.
Which is already...
It's already not good.
Yeah, and this is why even before the show came out, there was a lot of attempt to actually get the show not released Netflix because people believe that even though she's using her newfound beauty as a form of revenge, there's all these references to her once being fat and that being the core of all of her issues.
Yeah.
There's also running gags about sexual assault and molestation. Mm. It's also very unsettling.
And it's kind of it is unsettling. You know, I don't think anyone wants to see these sort of themes expressed in any sort of entertainment. So it's kind of, you know, already you kind of read this and you go, well, why would someone watch this? It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, and there's also quite inappropriate scenes, such as someone having sexual relations with another person's mother.
Mm.
What else do we have? We also have, you know, characters, lots of fat shaming, as I said, you know, characters being encouraged to go on drastic weight loss programs because of emotional eating. Someone's sexuality is a constant punchline because they fall in love with Patty. Lots of fantasizing. There's lines such as, it makes sense that you were a compulsive eater from the start.
Mm. And already you notice this, you know, negative vibes are expressed. And look, I think it's this type of TV series that's taken a big risk. We've also seen this risk taken with the newest adaptation of the Heathers series. If you haven't heard of Heathers, it was a 1988 film with the one and only Winona Ryder, and it has now been adapted into a TV series. And we've seen a lot of problems with the newest one that's just been released, is that it takes a huge risk with how it adapts the storyline, but also what themes it chooses to express, how it chooses to express them, and how they relate to everyday life and, you know, the current standings of our society. So I think it is a big, you know, it is a big risk, this TV series. And look, I think, you know, it is trying to get that humour evoked. You know, that's at the end of the day what it's trying to do. But, you know, when you're walking, I'm going to say it again, when you're walking that tightrope of humour versus, you know, outright, you know, rudeness, it's really, really hard to kind of say, like, is it worth that risk? Is it worth walking that tightrope?
Yeah.
Now, Hannah, how have critic reviews and social views for this been? Obviously, it is, you know, it is quite new. It is recently been released and it is on the Netflix streaming service. So it'll be really interesting to look back about how critics have reviewed this.
So it's actually really interesting because there's a lot of varied responses, even though the show's gotten a lot of backlash. Some audience reviews have said they absolutely love the show and they don't think that any of the negative reviews, they actually think that any negative reviews are shallow or don't have a sense of humor.
Okay.
And this particular audience member who wrote a review said they personally suffer from overeating and actually thought the show was great in portraying the struggles that you usually face growing up as a girl while making it really funny.
Mm.
So I think there is quite an interesting balance.
So you whether know, you could argue that this TV series just, you know, gives it to you bluntly. It's not going to, you know, go through the whole charade of saying, oh, we won't address that because that's like taboo. Look, but then again, you think, you know, is addressing the taboo, do you need to address the taboo like in this way? So it is a really, really, it's a big conundrum because it's saying it kind of just gets to the point in a blunt way. Is that good? Is that bad? Is there a better way you can kind of go on about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of other audience reviews said that the point of the show is that it's meant to be more dark humor.
Mm.
It's meant to be more that it's meant to be satirizing these very serious issues.
Yeah.
You know, almost a bit like Big Mouth where it satirizes puberty and development.
Yeah.
This is satirizing, you know, not that I want to say that it satirizes mental health, but, you know, these sort of disorders and what comes with it. So, again,
it's a big risk
because you've got a lot of people saying, well, this is what the show's about. It's meant to be a bit more controversy, a little bit more risky.
Mm.
Other people are saying it's just downright insulting.
Mm.
So I still think that culturally it is unacceptable and it has gone wrong a little bit. But, I mean, look, what do you think?
Mm.
Let us know. Send us a message. I think it would be really interesting to get some of our own listeners' opinions on it as well.
Yeah.
Because it also, like, when you watch the trailer, it looks pretty exciting.
Mm.
Very much like Heathers.
Mm.
An interesting mix, I think, of Heathers and Mean Girls.
Yes, absolutely.
So let us know what you think. We're going to go to a quick song break, and we will be right back.
Three Nights by Dominic Fike, an absolute bop. That was Three Nights, and we are three nights away from the start of a new week. You're with Sass, the Screen and Stage Show. Hope you're enjoying your Thursday morning. It's a lovely morning this morning, and you're with your regular co-host, Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. Now, today we've been looking at the concept of what goes wrong. And this means in the critic's eyes, in the social, you know, in the sociable eyes, in the sociable eyes, I don't think that makes sense, in the public eye, as well as in our own personal opinion.
Yeah.
But now it's actually going to go, we're going to go to our theatre segment and have a bit of a play on words with this idea of what goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to be talking about the play that goes wrong. And originally, it came as its own singular play, but just recently, Peter Pan Goes Wrong also came, so it's kind of becoming its own little, like, play series.
It actually is, and it's really interesting to see that there's this real push to kind of dramatize and also, you know, satirize, you know, a Disney play, Disney movies, Disney stories into something, you know, fun and quite eclectic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had the pleasure of going and seeing The Play That Goes Wrong last year with my dad, and wow, what a...
What, do we need the explosion? From
what a time. It was the bomb. Boom. No, it was really fantastic. You just were, like, you just could not stop laughing for the entire hour there. It was at the Comedy Theatre, so it was actually quite a nice theatre to do it, especially because half the time the set was falling over.
Mm.
So to be nice and far away from the stage, it was pretty ideal. So pretty much The Play That Goes Wrong tells the story about, in a sense, a cast that is trying to put on a play about a murder mystery. It's very fourth wall. It's a play about a play. And how...
Very Shakespearean, you know. Very you find that with Shakespeare, there's a play about a play, or play within a play.
That's right. So this is a play about a play, murder mystery, and pretty much how, you know, as the title implies, everything goes wrong.
Mm.
People forgetting lines, sets falling over, cast swearing on stage, cast members getting injured or hurt, people popping up at the wrong times, random things happening. you know, at one point there's a fire on stage.
What else can happen? Exactly. What else can go wrong?
And, you know, a grand finale of just the entire set literally falling over. And you just cannot stop laughing, and it's...
it sounds like an absolute bop of a play, let's put it that way.
Absolutely. So it was really funny, and in a sense, it was really... I actually found that it was to be quite an interesting satire of theatre mistakes.
Yeah, in general.
And how most of the time the audience members don't actually notice the mistakes that occur, you know, such as someone forgetting a line, saying something wrong, going to the wrong place... And yet, this play is all about it.
And that, what that reminds me of is I was fortunate enough to go and see Noises Off at the MTC 2 years ago. Mm. And this is the same sort of idea. The set was fantastic in that it revolved, and it was a play within a play. So what was happening on stage is these cast were forgetting lines, and then the set would rotate to backstage, and all hell was breaking loose.
Oh, so that's hilarious.
And it's amazing because it is, you know, satirizing the theatre in itself. And I think that's why it's so funny, is because, you know... I think going behind the scenes in anything is always kind of intriguing. So to go behind in a really comedic way and in a very true way, you know, these things happen behind the scenes.
Yeah,
behind
absolutely.
The scenes. So I think, yeah, it is a really, really, it's a really valuable and prominent piece, prominent idea to kind of evoke within the theatre is this idea of satirising theatre.
And I did also find it really funny that, you know, you actually wouldn't be able to know if they made a mistake in play because that's this whole thing.
Mm.
So I thought that was really funny, and I'd love to see another play like that again. That really is just pure comedy. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And, I mean, you've got to be really talented to be able to act out mistakes.
Well, and as you said before, like, you know, you don't know whether they make mistakes. So whether you have a little bit of security there, it's like we wouldn't be able to know this.
I think so.
I think you've still got to have that real persistence to just stay, like, focused in knowing what chaos you've got to cause. Like, it's quite ironic. You've got to stay really focused to make mistakes, if that makes sense.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean? It's not only stay focused, don't make mistakes, but in this case, it's staying focused to make the right mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think Peter Pan Goes Wrong was just here in Melbourne. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see him, but it would have been a lot of the same idea and also got a lot of really good reviews.
Yeah, so it was just on at the Arts Centre during the end of January. And as I said before, it explores this, you know, very classic Disney fairy tale of Peter Pan going to Neverland and having an adventure there. So look at, yeah, it is really interesting to find how it, you know, how there are entertainment pieces these days that are kind of, you know, borrowing from other classics and, you know, making them into something comedic, something more dramatic. And I think it was a huge success at the Arts Centre. And I think it'll be interesting to see what's next in this idea of what goes wrong. You know, are we going to have a Cinderella Goes Wrong? Are we going to have a Bambi Goes Wrong? I don't want to say Bambi Goes Wrong because we
like
love Bambi.
Like the hunter misses the mum. He's like, oh, now there's nothing to talk about, you know.
But, you know, what's going to be next? And it will be really interesting. If you have any ideas or any, you know, suggestions of what should come next with what went wrong, send them through to us and we'll be posting our links to all our socials after our song break. For now, we're going to Love Somebody by Maroon 5. This is Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. And that was Love Somebody by Maroon 5. Hope you enjoyed that bop and all the other bops that we've had today. You're with Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with Nick Angus and my lovely co-host, Hannah Shouter.
It has been a great show this week. We've been looking at the theme, what went wrong, not just in terms of the box office, but in terms of conveying ideas, the cultural response and the audience response, but also just how maybe some things are meant to go wrong. And that's part of the whole storylines. We looked at a ton of really interesting pieces, just to mention a few: Suicide Squad, Fantastic Four, Insatiable, and The Play That Goes Wrong.
As well as our own segment on, which was really, really interesting. We thought we would include a bit of a different segment today, and we included a game, which was called...
Bummed Out.
Oh, she's back. The bomb
is back. So if you liked that segment, we just thought we'd try out something new. Please let us know on Facebook if you'd like some more game segments, because I found that to be a lot of fun. But until then, we're going to wrap up the show. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to check out more, you can head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/sass, where we post photos of us. You actually get to see our beautiful faces behind the voices, as well as all the links to our podcast, which you can find on omnistudio.com and now on Spotify as well.
So exciting. And it is amazing to have those two accounts now to put through all our podcasts.
Absolutely. We will put a bit of a disclaimer that if you're going to be listening on Omni, please be sure to download the episodes so that we can see that you're listening. And that goes pretty much the same for Spotify as well.
And big news coming. We will have a blog coming very soon. We have hinted it in past weeks, but it is going to be coming where we're not really too sure how it's going to work yet, but it's going to be a lot more of written what we discuss in the show. So a lot more reviews, a lot more discussion, a lot more analysis in the writing form.
Yeah, so that'll be fantastic. But until then, thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week and keep up with your screen, Erin Sage. In other words, Nick.
Stay sassy.
And we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
I have a feeling that outro went wrong.
Oh.
Oh, no.
We might have to do the whole show again.
Oh, we'll see you all next week. Bye.